The following interview is part of the American Phytopathological Society Centennial Oral History Project. In this interview, Ray Tarleton and Steve Nelson discuss the history of the headquarters of the American Phytopathological Society and the role of APS staff in the operations of the society. Ray Tarleton was the first executive vice president of APS, and he served from 1967 to 1991. During that time, he oversaw the transformation of the administrative operations of APS into the organization that it is today. Steve Nelson, the current executive vice president of APS, interviewed Ray in Tucson, Arizona in September 2007.
Good morning, Steve.
Good morning, Ray.
I wanted to sort of reminisce with you the past history, at least my history with APS. And it dates back to Dr. Helen Hart at the University of Minnesota, Department of Plant Pathology. Back in 1952, I believe, I had an office on the campus because the head of the Department of Biochemistry was editor of Serial Chemistry. And I was editing and doing the book work, and I was asked to go over and help Dr. Hart on some problems she had with the printer. So I walked across the parking lot and got over to see Dr. Hart, and that's when I first heard of a plant pathologist. But after that, about 1956, I would say, I believe the editorship changed. And Thor Commodal became editor. And Thor, I had known on campus very briefly, but I then was asked to do some part-time editing of phytopathology. So I did some editing, and my wife and I would do the proofreading. And those days we had galley proofs and page proofs and, you know, all the stuff that we don't do now. But we would edit phytopathology at home at night and do the reading on the weekends. And we did that through Thor Commodal's term. And then after Thor completed his term, my employer, the American Association of Serial Chemists, said, you know, we have other things for you to do. You just can't do this extra side work anymore. So I told APS then. And then about 60, I think it was 67, my wife got a call from Kilman. And she said he wanted to speak with you. So I called him back that evening, and he said, we'd like you to do some editing for the society. Could you do that? And I said, no, I'm working full-time for the serial chemist. And so if you want me to do any work, you're going to have to go through the AACC.
Arthur was one of the officers at that time?
Arthur was the president at the time.
Okay.
Yeah. And that's the first time I had met him. But he apparently got in touch with I gave him the names of the serial chemist officers, and he got in touch with them. And eventually a deal was worked out where we would do the editing for APS for phytopathology, because that was the only journal that was active at the time. And then we went from there to we had an office in above a former bank building in St. Paul, in one of the suburbs of St. Paul. And we were getting ready to move down. We were in the upstairs part, and we were getting ready to move down where the actual bank was, because it had vaults and everything. And unfortunately, the building was torched one September evening, and that sort of destroyed all of our plans. So we moved into a warehouse, brought all the files, and that's when we first met you.
Yeah, that's
and you came over from McAllister College to help us clean up the files.
Actually, Hamline.
Hamline
University.
College.
Yeah.
Hamline.
And you had as I recall, you needed a number of strong arms to work with the cleanup of the records and the paperwork and get you back in shape.
Right. We were in a total mess. and a smell. You smell, you know, I go home every night, my wife would say, gosh, you smell, go take a shower. And, yeah. But we struggled with that for about a year before we really got things reorganized again. And then we got together with some of the officers and they said, you know, this, let's not rent anymore. Maybe we should consider buying. And the two groups, the executive committees of the two groups got together and discussed this. And you have to remember, up until that point, there was no agreement, there was no joint financial arrangement with the two groups. The Cereal Chemists provided services for a fee to APS. And it was just at that point where the discussion was leading to a partnership as we have now. But
So they were just kind of finding that, realizing that there was a opportunity if they worked together, the efficiency of having joint staff.
They were somewhat satisfied, I would say somewhat, but I think satisfied with the arrangement that we had and the results that they were achieving for phytopathology. And they wanted to expand that. So we decided to go out and look for a building, couldn't find a building that we could afford. And in fact, we looked at the old Pillsbury Mansion in Minneapolis, and it was a four-story, typical, you know, 20s mansion for the very rich. But to use it for an office, it had to have so many changes and alterations that we decided that wasn't it. So they formed a joint committee between the two societies, and Dan McPherson, who was VP at General Mills at the time, chaired it, and we went out looking for land. And we found a piece of land in Eagan, Minnesota, which was a suburb of St. Paul. And it was part of a farm that was being sold off by the developer. And it still had the old farmhouse on the land. So we bought 3 acres, and I think the price was $45,000, which was a horrendous sum for us at that time. And we bought it, and then a year later, we started to build, and we built the office, and it was completed, I think, in November of 71.
That was quite a undertaking for two groups that were just getting to know one another, and a little bit of trust required, and obviously a commitment for the future.
It was tricky because the plant pathologists were a more conservative group than the cereal chemist. They were largely academic. The cereal chemists were largely industrial. And they had slightly different attitudes about things like, you know, managing a society and investments and things of that nature. But after a lot of discussion, they went for it.
And well, would you say that it was... had the potential to work because they had similar needs?
Similar needs, and I think by that time they had realized that the services that an office could give them, headquarters could give them, was something they really needed if they wanted to expand.
Maybe talking a little bit about what it's like from a staff member's viewpoint of working with so many different volunteers. And volunteers, of course, are in their office for only a few years, so they're continually flowing through.
Almost like a revolving door. But I think the most important thing that the staff has been able to accomplish, and I should go back to when we first built the building, the very first thing that the two societies did was to create what is known as the Headquarters Operations Committee. And that consisted of the incoming president, the president, and the past president of each society. And it was that group that was to manage the building and the staff. It was too cumbersome to have the governing boards of each society, you know, get involved in the details. But that smaller group was given the responsibility of managing the building and managing the staff. And, of course, managing is a vague word because the group only met once or twice a year. And, you know, it was up to the staff. But the executive vice president reported to that group. That's the group that did his or her evaluation every year. So that was an essential part. And I think, as you know, that group now has gotten even more authority, as I understand it. And they are really are the heart and soul of the day-to-day operations of the building.
Yes. Well, in I think it's each officer comes with a different background, different expertise, different interests. So, you know, that affects your position and what you did for the society to adapt to that person.
Well, and certainly the attitude of the members of each society were quite different. There's the industrial people had one one attitude towards the building and its function and what the staff could do or should do, and the plant pathologist had somewhat of a different attitude because of their background in terms of becoming more involved. The serial chemists were never as involved directly as members. They were not as directly involved in the activities, even the scientific activities, as the plant pathologist. I think academics, just by and large, are more involved in the broader aspects of their science than industrial chemists are, because if you're in an industry, you're working for a company, and you've got that one product or product line to be concerned about. And I think it's a much broader field of endeavor when you're a plant pathologist. You're looking at a much broader area to be concerned about. And so I think from that standpoint, those two, if you recognize, as a staff member, if you recognize those two differences and just accepted them the way they are and went about your business, you were okay.
I always enjoyed the culture at headquarters and working with volunteers, and it seems that the real successes that APS has enjoyed with publications and meetings and other things was due a lot to this culture and this partnership of staff and member working together. And that didn't happen just in the beginning because that culture wasn't there.
I think over the years, I think one of the most important things that the building did for each society was to enable the members to actually come, because they had to come for the meetings, the executive committee meetings and the board meetings and the council meetings that would be held. And that gave the members an opportunity to see the building, to see what the staff was doing, and to appreciate what asset they had, and in addition, what the staff could really accomplish. And I think that was important. I don't think without that building, without their own headquarters, they could have felt the same way or reacted the same way.
What do you think are some of the many members are not involved in the leadership or get a chance to visit headquarters? So what do you think the misconceptions are of a member that doesn't get to know intimately this what goes on at headquarters?
Well, I think initially, I think more APS attitude than the serial chemist was, why do we need a staff? We've been doing this all these years by ourselves, you know, and it's worked. We don't need a paid staff. And you get the feeling from the staff standpoint that you were being somewhat mistrusted because they weren't comfortable with that. But that was only because with some of the older and more prominent members of the society, the younger members, younger at that time, of course, didn't have that attitude. They were a different mindset. And it took about maybe 5 or 6 years before the average member realized that the headquarters was beneficial to them and was performing a service and wasn't going to run away with all the money.
Well, even to this day, I sometimes a member assumes that there's a commercial operation or that it's owned by a company or something, when in fact the society owns headquarters, the members own the headquarters. And I think I like to say that scientific society is different because the members are the owners of the society. The members are largely the workers of the society, and they're the customers of many of the services and benefits. And because it's all nonprofit, we get this opportunity to focus on member value more than the dollars and cents, although we've always had to try and keep them financially healthy. And I know in the early days that wasn't always easy.
It was not always easy because income, until we got the book program going for APS, income was primarily dues, and there's just a limit to how much you can generate from that. And we had a small staff. When the building was built, we had a staff, I believe, of seven, and I think of the seven, two were part-time. So it wasn't a very large staff. In fact, we rented out probably a third to a half of the building. We had a company called Univac, which was a big computer company, across the street from us. And they needed some extra space, so we rented out part of the building. And the building was designed to do that at the time. So we rented out part of the building to them for about 5 years before we really could do it.
I have to say that you guys had big ideas building a building of what, 20-some thousand feet the first?
Yeah.
When you had seven employees at the time,
that was pretty risky. That was a bit of heavy discussion when we were designing the building, but we had some foresighted people, both in both societies, that said, you know, we're going to build something, not just for the day, but, you know, we hope this is going to be 20 or 30 years, and we want some space to grow into. So it was fortunate that we had the committee, the building committee of the two groups, with people that were very foresighted, and that made all the difference in the world. They could see things down the pike that I never saw. But
Ray, you know, it's probably good that we explain exactly what our positions have been for the society and what a executive director or executive vice president, what that is, and who you work for, and what your responsibilities are for the society.
I agree, and I think one of the interesting things about our arrangement, being the serial chemist and the plant pathologist having a joint operation, and I mean really joint, because they're tied together in so many different financial ways, and yet they maintain total independence scientifically, and it's a perfect combination, and it takes a lot of effort on the part of both societies and the members of both societies to make something like that that happen. But as far as the staff goes, the members maybe do not realize that the executive vice president is the chief operating officer, you might say, of the society. That person is responsible for carrying out the orders and the instructions and the desires of the officers of each society. In other words, the executive vice president is instructed in many ways by the board of directors or by the council, by the executive committee, or by the headquarters operations committee. These are the things that we want you to accomplish in the coming year or in the coming months. For plant pathology or for the serial chemist or whatever. And part of that is to make the operation financially successful. Well, in the early days, it was a difficult task because the building is not overly complicated to run, but it costs some money. And it was an overhead that we didn't have to carry before. So we had to learn how to adjust to that. And one of the ways of doing it was to provide our expertise, the staff expertise, to outside organizations, to other nonprofit organizations. And that nonprofit is very important because to maintain our tax status, we have to be very careful about who we do business for and with. You have to have a similar tax classification, otherwise you're in trouble. Where do you see the society going from now?
Well, I see us just on the verge of being more proactive, looking at issues that are going to face the science, plant pathology down the road, being able to align our expertise to work on these issues in advance, so and not waiting for the things to happen and then seeing what APS can do to do that. I see the society working with other societies on unique issues, having many more smaller meetings, unique meetings dedicated to specific issues or topics in a timely fashion. I see us allowing being much more international in the interactions. A society can enable scientists to connect with other scientists around the world and communicate on a regular basis to work together on those things. So,
weren't you just over in China with a project for?
We're working with the Chinese Plant Pathology Society, and we've had several summit meetings with them, and they sent a delegation to San Diego. They're coming to the centennial, and we're going to try some experiments of sharing information, because the science of plant pathology is truly global, and this is a global world, and so we have to find ways to bring member to the value to the members, and this is an area where APS can do a lot to help out. So we also have to be careful that we don't try everything. APS is, the level of activity is huge right now, and one of the challenges, we have so many committees and boards and things going on, and they all need to know what each other are doing all the time, so that they aren't at odds with each other or don't step on each other's toes. And that's a challenge for the officers to know and to help direct all of this and help lead it to a common vision. And so we have our issues, and technology continues to be a challenge and a big help, but also a challenge in staying ahead of it and using it, because our members and our other customers, our broader outreach, expect us to be top of the line all the time.